Thank you, Brother Marvin. We oftentimes hear about having a faint heart or a joyful heart, something that pertains to our hearts. And I wanted to read a little bit this morning about the hearts of some of those that God used. And God knew their hearts better than they knew their own. And how they should obey with their heart. And I'm going to start in the third chapter of Exodus. And this was where God had given Moses a commandment. And Moses didn't think he was worthy of doing what the Lord had commanded him to do. So he argued a little bit with the Lord. And I'm going to read here in the third chapter of Exodus, verses 9 through 14. Now, therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come upon me, and I have also seen the oppression wherewith the Egyptians oppressed them. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. And Moses said unto God, Who am I, that I should go unto the Pharaoh, and that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve God upon this mountain. And Moses said unto God, Behold, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, The God of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, What is his name? What shall I say unto them? And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am, has sent me unto you. We sometimes hear a song, The Great I Am. And this is where that song comes from, when God called himself, I am. Because he is. He always will be. He always has been. I'm going to skip over to the next chapter and read the first 15 verses there of chapter 4. We know that the Lord knew the heart of Pharaoh and knew the problems that they would have with Pharaoh. And so he had to convince Moses that he would be with him, that he would give him the power to convince the people of Israel that they should follow Moses out of Egypt. So in verse 1 of chapter 4, And Moses answered and said, But behold, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say, The Lord hath not appeared unto thee. And the Lord said unto him, What is that in thine hand? And he said, A rod. And he said, Cast it on the ground. And he cast it on the ground. It became a serpent. And Moses fled from before it. And the Lord said unto Moses, Put forth thine hand, and take it by the tail. And he put forth his hand and caught it, and it became a rod in his hand, that they may believe that the Lord God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob hath appeared unto thee. And the Lord said furthermore unto him, Put now thine hand into thy bosom. And he put his hand into his bosom, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous as snow. And he said, put thine hand into thy bosom again. And he put his hand into his bosom again, and plucked it out of his bosom, and behold, it was turned again as his other flesh. And it shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign. And it shall come to pass, as if they will not believe also these two signs, neither hearken unto thy voice, that thou shalt take of the water of the river, and pour it upon the dry land. And the water which thou takest out of the river shall become blood upon the dry land. And Moses said unto the Lord, O my Lord, I am not eloquent, neither heretofore, nor since thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. And the Lord said unto him, who hath made man's mouth? Or who maketh the dumb, or the deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I the Lord? Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. And he said, O my Lord, send, I pray thee, by the hand of him whom thou wilt send. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, is not Aaron the Levite thy brother? I know that he can speak well. And also, behold, he cometh forth to meet thee, and when he seeth thee, he will be glad in his heart. And thou shalt speak unto him, and put words in his mouth, and I will be with thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what ye shall do. So Moses kept coming up with one thing after another, the reason why he couldn't do what God had commanded him to do. His heart wasn't in it. He said, well, first, the people aren't going to believe me that I have come before God, and God told me to lead them out of Egypt. And so God showed him the three different ways that he could convince the people that he was following after the commandments of God. And then he says, well, I'm not eloquent of speech. I can't talk to these people. There's a lot of people there, and I can't get up before people and talk like that. And the Lord said, okay, then I'll use your brother, because I know he can speak well. So I'll use Aaron. He'll be your mouth. But you know, later on when you read the scriptures, you see that Moses got up before those people, and he got real used to talking to them. He didn't have to use Aaron, because he had in his heart that he had to do what God had told him to do, and he saw the miracles that God did, the plagues that came upon Egypt, one thing after another, till he was fully convinced that, yeah, he was to lead the people out of Egypt, and the Lord was with him, and he was going to do it. And he was determined that he was going to do it. And when the people didn't believe him, he became angry at the people. Just like God had become angry at him when he wouldn't do what God had commanded him, it kindled the Lord's anger. That's not a place where we want to be. Because he is God. And he knows our hearts, and he knows what he can accomplish through us. He knew the heart of Pharaoh, and he knew what it was going to take to get Pharaoh to let those people go. He knew it wasn't going to be easy. We have another example of a man who was told to do something, and he argued with God, said, I don't want to do it. And that was Jonah. And Jonah was told to go to Nineveh to preach to the people, and Nineveh was a huge city. It was 3 days' journey to get across the city limits of Nineveh. And Jonah didn't want to do it. And the Lord told him, you go to Nineveh, do what you're told. So he decided he was going to hide from the Lord. He was going to take a ship, go out across the sea. The Lord wouldn't find him there. Well, what happened to him was the sea became very violent. And the mariners that were in that ship said, "This is something from God. This is the Lord's doing. He's angry at somebody." And so they started looking, and they started praying, and they took all the things out of their ship that weren't absolutely essential, and they threw them overboard so the ship wouldn't sink because of the violence of the sea. Well, then the shipmaster found Jonah, and he was hiding, and he was actually sleeping in an area where people usually didn't go in the ship. And he got Jonah up, and he said, "What have you done?" And so Jonah told him, "Well, I guess I angered the Lord." And so that's where we're going to pick up this, in the first chapter of Jonah. And I'm going to read the very end of that chapter, which is verses 15 through 17. And the shipmaster asked Jonah, he said, what should we do that the Lord isn't angry with us? And Jonah said, "Well, you're going to have to throw me overboard, I guess." So Jonah, even though he didn't have it in his heart to do what the Lord had commanded, he still had it in his heart that he didn't want this ship to sink. He didn't want all these people to die because of something he had done. So he just told him, "Well, throw me overboard." So they took up Jonah and cast him forth into sea. And the sea ceased from her raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice unto the Lord and made vows. Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. It took 3 days before Jonah decided, "Well, I guess maybe I ought to do some praying myself. Maybe I ought to tell the Lord I'm ready to do what he told me to do. If he'll just let me out of this fish's belly." So in chapter 2, I want to read verses 7 through 10. This is Jonah when he's praying. He says, "When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy, but I will sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord." And the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land. So when Jonah finally conceded and said, "Okay, Lord, I'll do it," then he was spewed out of the fish back up on the shore. And he was ready. He'd had a change of heart. He said, Okay, I'll make the attempt here. In chapter 3, I want to read the first three verses. It says, "And the word of the Lord came unto Jonah the second time, saying, Arise, go into Nineveh, that great city, and preach unto it the preaching that I bid thee. So Jonah arose and went unto Nineveh according to the word of the Lord." Now Nineveh was an exceeding great city, a 3 days' journey. I wonder how many of us, if we were told to go to New York, go to New York City and preach unto those people that what they're doing is wrong. You tell them how wrong they are. And that the Lord's going to chastise them unless they change their ways. Or you could go to Los Angeles. Any city that where it takes you 3 days to walk across that city. That's basically what Jonah was told to do. Would be a little bit awe-inspiring, wouldn't it, to say, I'm the one that's supposed to go and tell these people that the Lord is going to come down on them hard unless they change their ways. They're probably going to run me out of town. But you know, the Lord was there with those people of Nineveh, and those people listened, and they actually changed their ways. And the Lord had mercy on them, and then Jonah got mad because the Lord's mercy was upon Nineveh and all the things that they had done wrong. And so Jonah still had his own little mission going here, even though he did go and prophesy to the people in the way he was told. Sometimes it's hard to change our hearts. It's hard to change people. But there was a reason for all this, as there usually is with the Lord. He has reasons for what he does. And this was a sign to the people. And one of the places we can read about it is in Matthew 16. 16th chapter of Matthew. And I'm going to read the first four verses. The Pharisees also with the Sadducees came, and tempting desired him that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said unto them, when it is evening, ye say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. O ye hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the times? A wicked and adulterous generation seeketh after a sign, and there shall no sign be given unto it, but the sign of the prophet Jonas. And he left them and departed. The Lord speaking here about the sign of Jonas. Jonas not willing to do what the Lord had said. Not recognizing what was written in his heart. That he should do. These Pharisees and Sadducees, they come up and they tempt the Lord. They say, well, you need to show us the sign. But you know, the Lord will show signs to those that are sincere in heart. He will tell them exactly in a way that they can understand exactly what the Lord expects. But he says, when you're an adulterous people and you're not here to ask in sincerity, he says the only sign you're going to get is the sign of the prophet Jonas. Let the fish swallow you. Your heart isn't in the right place. They're not sincere about it. So Jonas was used as an example in the work that Christ has to do. When David was speaking to Solomon, Well, even before that, when Samuel was appointed to be the one to anoint the one that would be Saul's basically the one that was going to replace Saul eventually, but he was to be a servant to Saul, the anointed one. And the Lord told Samuel to go and speak to this man Jesse, who had sons. He said, anoint one of those sons. We can read about this in 1 Samuel chapter 16. And we see where the people came to Samuel, and the first one he saw was Eliab. This would have been one of the brothers of David. Verse 6 here, chapter 16, 1 Samuel. And it came to pass when they were come that he looked on Eliab and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. But the Lord said unto Samuel, look not on his countenance or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth. For man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. So Samuel saw this tall, good-looking man. He said, oh, surely the Lord's with him. Look how tall he is. Look how good-looking he is. Why, he should be the anointed one. And the Lord said, no, I refuse him. He says, you need to look a little deeper than just his physical stature. And you know, Samuel went through all the brothers. And the Lord refused them all. And he says, well, now what? He says, Jesse, do you have any more sons? Jesse said, well, I do have the youngest one. But he's out taking care of the sheep. So Samuel said, well, I'll wait for him. You bring him to me. I want to see him. And when David was brought before Samuel, then the Lord said, this is the one you will anoint. The youngest one. Because he knew the heart of David. I want to read in 1 Chronicles. First Chronicles chapter 28. And this was where David was speaking to Solomon, his son. Verse 9, 28th chapter of First Chronicles. Remember that Solomon was the one that was very wise. And thou, Solomon, my son, know thou the God of thy father, and serve him with a perfect heart with a willing mind, for the Lord searcheth all hearts, and understandeth all the imaginations of the thoughts. If thou seek him, he will be found of thee. But if thou forsake him, he will cast thee off forever. One of the things that David told Solomon was, the Lord's going to search your heart. The Lord had searched David's heart, and David knew that. And he told Solomon, if you seek after the Lord, you'll find him. Because he's there. How many times are we told to knock? Knock. And the Lord will be there. The door's open. But we have to seek him. But if we turn against the Lord, then he won't be there for us. I want to go back to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 6, and read 4 through 6. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one Lord, and thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy might. And these words which I command thee this day shall be in thine heart. Speaking to Israel here, telling Israel, as a people, you need to seek after the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your might, with all your strength. We're told that throughout the scriptures, both in the Book of Mormon and in the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament. It doesn't matter. I can find it in there for you. But we're told to seek after the Lord with all our heart, with all our soul, with all our mind and might and strength. That doesn't leave a whole lot, does it? If we do that, we don't forsake the Lord. We don't forget about him. We don't deny him when he tells us to do something. In the book of Jeremiah, another prophet, chapter 17, verse 10. It says, I, the Lord, search the heart. I try the reins, even to give every man according to his ways and according to the fruit of his doings. I try the reins. How does that apply to us if we try the reins? It means the Lord is going to test to see how our heart is guided. Is our heart responsive? If you try the reins, it means that you take control and see how it responds. If you're buying a car in these days, you want to know how that car drives. Does it have power steering? Does it have power brakes? Does it respond to what I need to respond to? Is it going to do what I want my vehicle to do? That's trying the reins. And the Lord tries the reins of our heart. He says, how's your heart going to respond? I'm going to try your heart. see what kind of fruit it produces. We're told that we should produce the good fruit. That's what's going to make the difference in our lives. The verse before that, verse 9, says, "The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Can we look at someone and just say, well, their heart's not good? I wouldn't want to have that put on me, because I can't see their heart. I don't know what they're thinking or what's inside. All I see is the outside. But if you look at the works that they do, that'll tell you what their heart's doing. If their heart's not in it and they're not doing the good things, then we can kind of judge it. Yeah, that person's not exactly doing what they're supposed to. I'm just going to quote Proverbs 20, verse 9 says, "Who can say, I have made my heart clean, I am pure from my sin?" Who can say that? Can I forgive myself for sins? Can I clean my heart? Can I say that I am pure without having the Lord there to help me out? There has to be some kind of repentance, doesn't there? There has to be an order to what I do. And so I have to ask the Lord to forgive me of my sins. I have to be repentant, and I have to be true in my heart and pure before the Lord, that my desire is to produce the good fruit with my heart. Let the Lord take the reins of my heart. And then the Lord is the one who can say that my heart is clean. He can wipe the slate clean and help me to start over. I can't do it myself. I want to read a couple of verses in Matthew 12. Verses 35 through 37. These are the words of Christ. "A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment." If we have to give an account for every little thing that we have done that offended somebody else or offended God or that didn't produce good fruit, then I would hope that the Lord would hear my prayer of repentance and say, those things are forgotten. You're forgiven of the things where you fell short. Because if I have to give an account for the things that I've done in the past that didn't please God, then it wouldn't go well for me in the last days when this life is over. My treasure that I store in heaven would be pretty small. We want to store up that treasure so that we are awarded when this life is over with the treasure that we have stored up. In Proverbs 15, verse 13, it says, A merry heart maketh a cheerful countenance, but he that is of a merry heart hath a continual feast. When we consider the feast of the Lord, it's the good fruit that we've produced. It's the treasure that we have stored up. It's the things that God keeps giving to us, both in this life and in the life hereafter. We have a feast. That's in Proverbs 15, verses 13 and 15, where it speaks about the merry heart, the cheerful countenance. You know, we're not going to go around with a long face and drooping and say, my heart's merry. Because if it's merry, people are going to see it, that you have a merry heart, that the Lord's with you, that your countenance is good, that your heart is good, that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Sometimes it takes some convincing. If we're going to be like Moses or like Jonah, we're going to put it off. We're going to tell the Lord, well, yeah, I'll do it, but later. We don't know that we're going to have later. The Lord wants us to have a merry heart. He wants us to be joyful and to produce the good fruit and to have people look at us and say, that person's got something I would like to have. That person has a merry heart. I hope we all have a merry heart. I hope you have a good day. My prayers are with you, and I hope that you'll pray for me. Thank you.